Hey, what's up, y'all? This is Mojo, and that's Jessica, and this is Container Life with Mojo and Jessica, where the sky is not the limit, and we are creating Black success from inside the box using shipping containers. And if you were with us last week, you know that we started with our four-letter word sequences, right? And the four-letter word for the week was team. And this is part two of that. So team meaning how you vet your container click, how you find the team and the right people to put together to do your container home project. And you might think as the consumer slash homeowner that you don't necessarily pick the team, but take it from the builders, that's us, and the project managers, that's also us, you may very well be a part of the process of picking your team, because we may have a team that might not work for you and you might need to pick other people. And so, and Jess, you want to tell them what we did last week, the first three steps, because we're going to do the second three steps today. So give us a little recap on what we did as the first three steps last week.
All right, guys. So last week we talked about lists, which is making a list of who you need. So what that means is you want to start writing down the actual people that you want on your team. And that's your preliminary step so that you can at least begin your mapping of the people that you want to consider to be a part of your container click. Two was pick. So our four-letter word pick stands for pick 2 to 3 contenders for each profession. So we mentioned a couple of people that need to be on your team. So I'll go back to that real quick. So you need an architect, you need your MEP, which is your mechanical, electrical, and plumbing engineer. You need your civil engineer, you need a structural engineer, and you need a project manager. And your GC, of course. And so those people are the ones that are pretty much your folks that you need to have as a core team. Now, sometimes you may be able to just partner with somebody, another agency, for instance, that may have all those people to make your life easy. But unfortunately, you still need to go through these steps to even vet that agency to make sure you guys are in alignment. So pick 2 to 3 contenders or agencies that can represent those professions we just talked about. And then the last one we talked about was show. So you want to interview and you want to ask for photos or videos of that person's portfolio, because you want to know what is it that they do, what is it that they've done, and how you guys may be able to match. So now as we go into number 4, which is best is going to be pick your top contender. And so remember you said we're going to pick 2 to 3 people. And so when you're picking your top contender, you want to find somebody who actually is going to be like your number one pick, your draft pick, the one. And so we're going to go a little bit deeper into that in a minute. But anything you want to say about picking your top contender, Mojo?
Just that keeping in mind that when we go through our list and we go through our picks, even though we go for our best and pick our best contender, we want to still keep contact information and that backup list of people for us to be able to, in the event that something happens with the first, with our top, right, with our star player, we got to have a bench. We got to have some reserves. So just keeping in mind that we want to not burn bridges. And even if that if those people are not our best and our top pick, that we always have maintain those lists and that contact information for the backup people in the event that we need to bring somebody else in on a project. Yeah, that's about it. Then once you get through your list and you pick your best, then we moving on to the next step.
Yeah, and I like what you just said, have backups. You know, you may like somebody and, for instance, I'm gonna give you an example. So sometimes I recruit students for different things. And so I fell in love with this girl who was in architectural school. She's from Venezuela. she was excited. You know, we were doing the girl power thing, all excited. And then she sends me a message to say, hey, I'm not staying in the States for the summer. I'm going to go home. And so we had this conversation about how she was want to come and work for us for the summertime in between her classes. And then she'll eventually join a team when she graduated in like a year. And so she says, I'm going back home. I just want to spend time with my family. That's to be expected, you know. People want to live their lives. And so if you may fall in love with somebody and get all excited about them, doesn't mean that that person is going to make the final decision to connect with you and join with your company. So keep that in mind, because what's going to happen is those backups are people that you can pull in to replace that person, right? Number five is meet. That's your four-letter word. And that means having a second interview to ask additional questions and even breaking bread with that person. Mojo, what's your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think that once we've decided that this is the person that we're going to pick, our best person, we need to meet with them on in a less formal space, right? Breaking bread is always good. I think that if we could go somewhere and have a meal and not like the white tablecloth, you better know how to pick your salad fork type of space. But, you know, because you know how like sometimes in regular jobs, right, they interview in these formal dinner type of situations, right, where you supposed, because they want to know what you know about etiquette and is this right and is that right. So you want to be able to, I would want to create a comfortable space where we could go break bread. You might be able to lick your fingers and still be okay afterwards, right? Yeah. So that you can let your head down a little bit and get to know the person, because working with me or Jess, you can't have a stick in your ass. It's not gonna work. I'm just letting y'all know. It's not gonna work. We not those type of people. We crack jokes, we have fun, we get the job done. And we do the work, but it's no stiff, robotic, we stick to this regimented system of how we do things and that's it. Like, nah, that's not how we do over here. So to be able to meet with a person and have lunch or maybe have dinner and maybe even bring in other people from the team, you know, to socialize and see how things mesh, I think that that's a good next step.
For sure. I agree. Yeah, I like to have fun. I don't take life that seriously. I know I probably should. That's what adulting is, right? But no, I like to have fun. I like good people. I like good places. I like good things, things with positive vibes. And so for me, in my interview process, I'm not really going to ask traditional questions. I just, you know, want to really get to know that person. So don't have a stick in your, what'd you say, stick in your hand or stick in your butt? Which one?
I said stick in your butt.
I'm not the same. I'm like, whatever it is, we don't like sticks. So number six, the final one is work. So after you have done everything, so that means one, you created your list, two, you picked your top contenders, three, you done saw their work and their capabilities. Four, you done had a second interview with them. And five, you re-met them again and kind of, you know, number four was picking your best contenders and then you re-met with them on five. Now you have to get the work, right? So, you know, one thing I know about people is, let's say I've met people who were fraudsters. So, you know, they talk a good game, they claim they can do all these things. And then when it was come time to work, they were incapable. And so when it comes to the work piece, I would say that maybe you guys start with a small project first, something minute, something that's not impactful, that it would disrupt your business. And then that will be your next step, is to just have that project as kind of like a tester moment, you know, for that person to kind of really see what they're capable of. And the reason why I say that is because, for instance, back to the architectural side of things, we're moving towards a franchise model. And within the franchise model, you kind of have to have your own in-house team. So you can't outsource a lot of things. And so what we started to do was start to pursue in-house architect, in-house design people, graphic design, you know, rendering specialists, all that. And so by doing that, we know that those are our people and they only work for us, right? Whereas if you kind of do like the partnership thing where you have an outside agency or you outsource those things, unfortunately, you're not their only client. And so you may not even know where you fit into the fold of their daily capacity. And so starting your first project will allow for you to kind of understand whether or not that person can be your in-house right-hand person for whatever that particular skill set is. And then it also allows for you to also see how you guys work together. You know, it's better to do a trial project than to go crazy on a major project where you guys spend months and maybe even years depending on the project, and you find that you don't like them in work. You may have had a good time with them because they handle sticking it, but maybe they're flighty and maybe they're not focused and maybe they're disorganized. So those are things that you really don't know until you start actually working with the person that kind of tells you who they are in work. So even though, you know, we're fun people, we like to have fun, we also get down to business. So you'll see, you know, a totally different side of us in regards to work and how things get done. So last and final step is work. What's your thoughts on that?
I think that in the space that we work in, the fact that we build container homes and the fact that we work in so many different spaces, and you know, like one of my specialty spaces are Airbnbs. And so I want to have models in different cities, right, for people to be able to see so that when they want to invest on the Airbnb side, they have models to see. So having these new people, as people come in, work on the models, then it's not that crunch time that's like, this is a customer's project, right? Versus a model that we're putting together where we have the wiggle room to make a mistake or to get your feet wet or something like that. I think it'll be good to have those people work on the models that we have coming out so that they have that space to like those for those first projects, and you could show me what you're working with and let us know exactly, you know, that you can do what you said you can do and not be destroying a customer project, costing extra money on a customer project that you got to be back, you have to go back to a customer to say the budget has changed or take a loss because something went wrong with this new team member, when we could always have them working on the models or the prefab side or stuff like that so that it's not impacting customer work.
For sure. I totally agree. I think that's a great strategy. I think when it comes to trial and error, never do it on a customer's dime. So if you're just building, you know, your first model home, or even if it's your second model home, it's best to kind of experiment with creating your container click during that time when you're spending your own money and not a customer's money. I think that's great advice.
Right. So if we could just go back through, because you kind of breeze through that six pack, right, of people that we need on our team. So yes, if we could just go back through those six people that we need as a part of our team, that'd be good, just so people know the parts of the puzzle.
And then I'll break down each responsibility that that person will have too. So first things first, you'll have your project manager. So your project manager is the person that pretty much keeps the team together. So their focus is on scheduling, budget, and execution. So your project manager is the boss of the project. Their job is to make sure all these other people that I'm about to mention are in alignment with the actual job. So your next person is going to be your general contractor. So your general contractor is the one doing all the work, right? You know, so picking a good general contractor is important. And more importantly, if you're doing container projects, they have to specialize in containers, okay? You cannot get a traditional GC that just fixes and does everything. This is not that kind of world that you just say, all right, today's the day, we're gonna pick a GC and he's going to just start doing container projects. That's not exactly how that works. So that's just like choosing a plumber to do electrical work. That's not their specialty. And so you cannot pick just any kind of general contractor. So you need to find somebody, honestly speaking, that has maybe some welding experience, of course. I call it metalworks experience because it doesn't necessarily just have to be welding. It could be other capacities. I meet a lot of general contractors that were in the military, and these container projects are huge in the military space. They do a lot of military barracks out of them. And so if they have experience being in the military doing construction, it's a good possibility that they may have had some experience with containers. But I would say they need to specialize definitely in container buildouts, or have some kind of welding experience, or have some kind of metalworks experience. The next person next to your general contractor is your architect. And your architect normally, which are the other people on the team, will have your MEP, also known as mechanical, electrical, and plumbing. Then you have your civil engineer. Your civil engineer is the person who is basically mapping out all your site work. So your architect is going to build the blueprints. Your MEP person is going to tell you where electric and plumbing and whatever other mechanical things, HVAC, whatever, where that stuff needs to go. Your civil engineer is doing all the site work that combines with what the MEP is doing. And then you need a structural engineer. Why is structural engineer important? Because you need to know how the mechanics of a container and how to stack them and where to stack them and how to place them so that they're in proper proximity. And also you're using the best use of that container in whatever type of project that you're doing. So your structural engineer is equally as important as all these other people. And I would say the last person could be an interior designer. You do need somebody to make it make sense. So the architect is going to pretty much overall give you blueprints with, you know, your elevations and where stuff is going to be placed and all of that. But the interior designer is what's going to make it beautiful for the end user to come in and live in there. And so all of those people, to go back to that list, project manager, general contractor, architect, mechanical, electrical, plumbing engineer, that's one person, civil engineer, structural engineer, and maybe your interior designer. All of those people will be your solid core team. And of course, even from an interior design perspective, you could have a residential interior designer and a commercial interior designer. They are actually two different skill sets. and so keep that in mind that you may need to use different people for different things. Another reason why you may have multiple architects is because maybe that architect that's your top contender may not be licensed in all the states that you do business. And so you do need to have multiple architects for that reason. Same thing with engineers. And even deeper than just having multiples is that really you want somebody who specializes in that local market. One architect is impossible, even if they are licensed in 40 states, to be masterful in every single locale that you're doing business. Right. And so we have multiple architects, engineers, all of that for that same reason. Same thing with the general contractor. Our company, it doesn't even make sense for us to be licensed in 50 states. And so what we do is we actually partner with other general contractors that are in certain areas, and they work with us on our projects, but they're the local expert. We know the container stuff, they may be the local expert, and we get together and we do that project together. And so keep that in mind, that what Mojo said, you don't wanna, just because you picked one person that is just the top person, you don't need anybody else. No, you should have all those other people as well, because you wanna have backups. And just keep in mind too, that, you know, even from a personality perspective, you may click with one person one day and a different person another day. And especially when it comes to a vision of a project, not everybody thinks like you. So they may be competent and capable of doing a container project, but doesn't mean that they'll follow your vision in the way that you do. So you want people who you mesh well with, even from a visionary perspective. So I'm glad she asked the question of let's go deeper on that topic, because it's a little bit beyond just picking somebody because you like them, cool with them or whatever. It does go deeper when it comes to, you know, your working relationship with them. What's your thoughts?
It's good because some people might think that construction is construction and it's not that for us, right? Like understanding the importance of this structural engineer and knowing that when you cut into a container, you cut into the integrity of the box, and that needs to be reinforced. We need structural engineers that could come in and say, yes, this is being reinforced in the right way. And this is how, you know, everything is going according to the way it's supposed to, so the joint don't cave in. Structure, we need that. So I think that's a good synopsis of how we pick our team and the team that we need to pick. And so if you looking to do a build and you do a build with us, of course we have teams in place. And like Jess said, we're in different areas, but we have what like regional building people for specific areas. We're not going to say this contractor works in all 50 states. Like, that's crazy. We deal in regions. And so we'll be able to put the teams together. That's and also coming into the neighborhood, right? And trying to hire within the neighborhood that you're building in. Like, we always talk about buying back the block and reverse gentrification and how we want to go into spaces and want people to live in the spaces that we build. And part of that is connecting with the local builders in the area to understand that we're bringing construction to where they are, but we're not outsourcing per se and bringing a whole nother construction team from across the country to do the work that somebody in the local area could do. So that's a really important aspect of the construction and the putting of teams together to be able to do that. And it's good to have good project managers with those good communication skills that know how to network and get put all the pieces together. People underestimate the importance of that project manager, but like you were sick, and it was like, yeah, you know, we want to call Jess. You know, we got a question. We need to call Jess. But you put automation in place and all of that for us to be able to function in the event that we're not able to reach you as the project manager. And that's a good thing to understand, using different systems to map out the project and keep it together, even though it's one project manager. One pony don't stop no show. Like, if something happens and the project manager is unavailable for any reason, we should be able to, the project shouldn't freeze. We should be able to keep going and continue with the project. And I felt like, I'm glad it wasn't project specific, that I was like, Jess, I need to ask Jess, but I know she's not feeling good and I don't want to disturb her, but I want to know. You know, but luckily it wasn't something that was urgent and project specific that I felt like I would have needed to disturb you. But you also have all your ducks in a row so that in that time when you were unavailable, the show ain't stopped. Everything still went on. So and we're very close to the three minute mark. So this show definitely went quickly, but we covered all the bases, and I hope we were clear about the importance of picking your team and understanding who's on your team, and the flexibility that they need and the adaptability that they need to be able to function in this container life. Right, Jess?
Definitely. And another thing I would add too is understand your team. So for instance, if your team has a family, they have kids, if they're married, you know, if they have volunteer outside of work, like keep in mind that people have a life outside of you. And so I would say the last thing on that note is to ask those questions to understand what people's responsibilities are outside of you so that you're not overburdening them. I find that sometimes people forget, like, you ain't the only person I know. You ain't the only person, you know what I'm saying? Like, you kind of get in that funk where you just feel like that person, it's like possession, like they belong to you. So I would say emotional intelligence should kick in and say, you know, well, maybe they're, you know, Mojo's not acting herself. Maybe something happened, or Jessica doesn't look like, you know, she's not being bubbly. Maybe, and that's how people realized I was sick. They said, Jessica, you are not yourself. What is going on? So that's where the emotional intelligence kick in, where you should be able to pick up on things that your friends, your neighbors, your workers, your business owners, business worker, whoever, you should be able to pick up on those things. So I would say, even within picking your team, really understand who is on your team and what they have going on outside of you so that you can remain flexible, but also maintain a good relationship.
Right. We want to maintain good work-life balance. We don't want to be that employer that's all in your business when you got something else going on in your life and your boss is like, but I need you right now. Whoa, my office hours are 9 to 5 and I will come to you like I need y'all to understand, don't let nobody do that to y'all, like for real, because they will replace your ass tomorrow. If something happened to you, they will replace you tomorrow and be all right, like nothing happened, but your family and your friends won't. So keep that in mind when you think about the focus that you give to your 9 to 5 or whatever it is that you do with your life. And on that note, we're going to have to wrap this one up. And it was good because we right on time. And it was picking your container click. And as usual, we'll be back next week with a new topic. We got a good one for y'all next week. And like we always say, if it ain't a container, you ain't about that life.
Ain't about that life. We see y'all next week.
All right. Love y'all. Peace.